the Vietnam War. It's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Greetings, Cretans.
Back in the fine, cool studios of the Hop Grenade.
That'd be nice. It's hot out today, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's hot in here, too. Mm. Not hot like Singapore hot, but it was hot. It's hot.
Singapore was quite unique in that respect.
It was not. So... here, like a day or two before I'm leaving for Korea, because I did Korea for a week, Singapore for a week, and then Japan for most of a week. A few days before I'm leaving, having dinner with Chris White, and he's like, Singapore is so incredibly hot, you don't realize how hot it's going to be. He had apparently done the same homebrew event that we had done.
Okay.
He's like, it's going to be so incredibly hot. You're going to, you know, like, be crying because it's going to be that hot. Well, went to Korea first. That was unbelievably hot. The people of Korea were going like, it's never been this hot ever. And, you know, it was miserable. That was, you know, near 100% humidity and, you know, near 100 degrees. And it was just brutal. But we had a great time. Loved Korea. Clean, much more quiet and mellow than you would think. You know, you think of these, like we went to Seoul, and you think of most big Asian cities as noisy and hectic and crowded.
Right.
Not at all. Not at all. It was just lovely. I loved Korea. I thought that was an awesome place.
Was the underground markets, were those air-conditioned?
Yes, they were. And so, like, yeah, everywhere, instead of crossing a street over a busy street and screwing up traffic, they just have all these underground passages, and you just walk down some stairs, walk underneath the street, walk back up. But connected to them is, like, a million miles of little shops of, like, strip mall type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, we saw the same thing in Singapore, really.
Yeah, but on a much grander scale in Korea. And if you read about it online, it makes it sound like, you know, it's all crammed in and cramped and you're going to get lost and it sounds dirty. And it couldn't be farther from the truth. It's like walking around, you know, American Mall.
Yeah.
So I had a great time there. So I was prepared for Singapore. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to survive Singapore because Korea is so hot. Yeah, to Singapore. And it was cool compared to Korea.
Yeah.
And you realize how hot that was. For me, it was nothing. I'm like, well, yeah, I already lived a week through, you know, much hotter.
Yeah. Jungle hot.
Oh, yeah. It was Africa hot. I'll tell you, Tarzan couldn't stand that kind of hot. But Singapore, so the heat did not bother me in Singapore. I thought that it was
warm, it was humid, but it wasn't that bad. It was like, what, 85, good chunk of the time we were there?
Yeah.
85, 90?
It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, not that bad.
I enjoyed it. David House, he had sent us apparently some tips before we left, which we did not get. It said, hi, Jamel and John. I would suggest having water with you at the event. Also, buy a pair of flip-flops before coming over. Wear shorts, a T-shirt, and maybe a hat. It's a fun event. It'll be under tents, hopefully with fans, but you can always duck into the shower for a little haircut if it gets too much. See you there.
Yeah, I couldn't fit my feet in flip-flops. Just wasn't going to happen.
We wore shorts, you know, but we were fine. Not bad at all. Our hosts were quite gracious.
Exactly, yeah.
Took wonderful care of us. Mm-hmm. And then we did that judging part, and that was indoor, air-conditioned, sitting at a table.
Right.
Couldn't have gone wrong. A lot of excellent beers there. I was very surprised at, I thought overall it was of a quality equal to, what you get at a great competition in the U.S.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Quality of beers was right there with the States. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I thought that there were several world-class beers there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting, that I guess Ray was telling us they only legalized home brewing about 10-ish years ago.
Right.
And so it's all come along since then, but yeah, it's...
Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So much to do. And then the event at Smith Street Taps in the Hawker Stall.
Oh, that was fun.
That was cool. I mean, so Hawker Stalls, for those of you who don't know, it's like all the little street market food vendors and tchotchke vendors and stuff.
Yeah, the stuff you see on the Food Network.
Right. They've moved all that in under like giant roofs. So they've collected them all. So they're not like lining the streets anymore. This way they can maintain quality, make sure they're clean, make sure they're, licensed. And so there's stalls where you can, for $3, you can get like a full meal. They also have like craft beer bars at the Smith Street Taps. It's in one of these like 8x10 stalls. Maybe it's not even that big. I don't know.
Yeah, it's about the size, yeah.
A couple of refrigerators, a couple of kegerators, a sink, and some glassware. That's it. And you go up and you're like, yeah, I'll take a pint of Evil Cousin. And they give you a pint of Evil Cousin. Then you just stand out there like where all the normal people are. They had some picnic tables and stuff, but it's not like in the U.S. where everything has to be fenced off and you have to stay within that boundary. It's just like you're free to wander around if you want.
Yeah. There was saute stalls next to us that dude had excellent saute. And our good friend Val Allen was there, and they were participating in that tap takeover. And
right.
So we had some great Anderson Valley beers as well.
Paul from Holgate was there.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that was a good IPA he had. I liked that a lot.
Yeah. They've always had great beer. So that was a blast. And then we did the SEA conference, the Southeastern Asia Craft Brewers Conference. And we talked at that. And I thought that was a very solid conference.
I expect
that'll grow quite well. Mm-hmm. And then we had the event at the burger joint.
Oh, yes.
Excellent burger. I thought that was every bit as great a burger as you could possibly get in the U.S.
Definitely.
And great beers, great pricing, nice vibe in that place. I told them, I said, I think, this would be successful anywhere in the U.S. And, it's very impressive for, I just loved it.
Yeah. It's funny. People kept telling me, or you'd read online that Singapore is really expensive to visit, but I didn't find it that expensive. I mean, maybe the hotels are a bit pricey, but in terms of food and transportation, it is cheap.
Well, especially if you eat, if you go into a sit down fancy restaurant, it gets kind of pricey.
Right.
If you go to one of the hawker stalls, it's cheap.
$3, $5.
There was had a great time. Enjoyed all that. Japan. Went to Japan as well. Excellent. Love Japan. My daughter and I, we'd been on the road, two full weeks, get to Japan, and We both had a smile when we reached Japan. We just, it's such a cool place. And the people are so neat. And it was just, we were just happy to be in Japan. It was like, you know, visiting one of your favorite places.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we just,
was it cooler there? Or?
Yeah, even cooler still. The typhoon had just passed, so everything was kind of cooled down a little bit. And I mean, it got warm too, but nowhere near like Singapore or Korea.
Oh, okay.
So, and Korea was extremely cheap, very affordable. Everything was, that's where you go to buy stuff. That's where everything is really well priced.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, somebody like Taylor could probably live there for a month before his supplies were run out. And, you know, here in the U.S., you could probably live for a day.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Huh? Hmm. I'm just saying. Korea.
Korea.
Great place. I loved it.
Well, it was interesting at the Southeast Asia Brewers Conference. I mean, we were meeting so many expats, you know, American and British, that were opening, you know, brew pubs in Vietnam, Thailand, Burma, Korea.
Right.
And they're saying, yeah, I'm like the only brew pub around. I mean, you know, and people were taken to him. He said, yeah, you know, they're busy.
Bringing alcohol to the locals.
Yeah.
So that's the American way. yeah. I had a great time.
Me too.
The only thing that would have made it better is if our good friend John Blickman were there.
That's true. That would have been fun.
But I'll tell you, he was probably working on some new fancy piece of brew gear that's going to blow everybody's mind.
Yes, that is a fact.
Oh, see, you know something.
Yeah.
Oh, see? I suspect these things, and they turn out to be true.
Yeah.
Because John Blickman's always using that considerable noggin of his to dream up new things and innovate people's brew day. So I think it's very cool that he sponsors this show, pays for the show so you don't have to. So go check him out, BlickmanEngineering.com. Send an email to feedback@BlickmanEngineering.com. Tell them how much you appreciate that they pay for the show. And beg them to keep doing so.
Yeah. Because we like doing it.
Yeah, we do too. Well, we like doing it so much because we get great suggestions like this from Thomas in Sweden. He was saying, our good friend Thomas.
as we wait for Taylor to produce the sideshow, Bob.
Sideshow, Bob.
What?
Thomas from
there we go.
This is Thomas from Malmo Brewing, I believe. Excellent brewer. Fantastic beers at Malmo Brewing. Thomas really knows what he's doing. And he wrote and said, hi, Jamel and John. Do you have any plans for an episode about hops? Cohumulone, beta acid, polyphenols, oil content, and so on. Every brewer knows about alpha acid, but what about all the other things in those green little wonderful things? How do I choose a good hop variety for bittering just by looking at specs and so on? Cheers, Thomas. So I thought that was actually a really good idea because we talk a lot about hops, but and we'll throw out, oh, you know, the cohumulone level, you know, you want it to be, and, you know.
Yeah.
We don't really get into any more detail than that, so I thought a good opportunity to kind of
dig into this a bit.
Yeah. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we take a short break, and when we come back, we can dig right into hops. Right after this.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high temperature March pump, and either a top tier gas burner or the new Boil Coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller, and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy. Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to MoreBeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to MoreBeer.com today and take advantage of The Buzz, the forum, the Learning Center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making. When I order a beer, I want my server to know more about it than I do. I want someone who enjoys good beer and loves helping others enjoy it too. I want someone who knows how to pour a perfect pint for every beer style. I want a Cicerone.
The Cicerone Certification Program is creating the type of people who help you enjoy great beer. Home brewers and craft beer lovers know beer is more flavorful and complex than ever, and it takes some serious knowledge to store and serve beer right. Cicerones know beer. There are three levels in the Cicerone Program: Certified Beer Server, Certified Cicerone, and Master Cicerone. Cicerones are truly the sommeliers of beer. The best beer locations have a Certified Cicerone on staff. Relaxed and unpretentious, Cicerones are tested on storing and serving beer, beer styles, flavor and tasting, the brewing process and ingredients, and pairing food with beer. Learn more about your next beer guide at Cicerone.org. Certified Cicerone, because it takes top talent to present a perfect pint.
Grog tags aren't just for labeling your home brews to hand out to your friends. They're the perfect way to round out your personal brewing marketing. Bringing your latest beer to a funeral? Craft a metal sign to go with it. Heading out to Little Liam's bar mitzvah? Grog tag custom bottle caps are awesome. Couldn't get out of jury duty this year? Grog tag the hell out of the deliberation room with reusable labels. Grog tag has an awesome array of products just waiting to be customized by you. Metal signs, coasters, tasting mats, bottle caps, tap handles. It's all there waiting for your designs at Grog tag. Liven up your next party with the widest selection of custom products ever offered by a sponsor of the Brewing Network. Grog tag. At least your beer will look good.
The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer?
They make beer.
Watch out! Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can, featuring
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right. So, John, what are the compounds in hops that brewers are interested in?
They're organic chemicals.
Yeah. can you list some of them for us? What should we focus on? I mean, well, you hear a lot of, you know, different things, but what are the important ones? What are the ones you should be reading about?
Okay, there's a variety of compounds. There's your alpha acids, which are the ones that we normally talk about. Mm-hmm. These isomerize into more soluble bitter compounds that give the beer its bitterness. They're the bulk of the bitterness in beer. Then you have your oxidized beta acids. And time was, you know, 100 years ago, hops had equal amounts of alpha and beta acids in them. And these were what we call the resins in the hops. They are resident in the lupulin glands, the little yellow powder that's inside the hop cone. Mm-hmm. And, you had kind of a one-to-one ratio of alpha to beta acids. Well, new hop varieties, the ones we've been raising these last, you know, decade or so, often have 2 or even 3 to 1 alpha to beta acids. Mm-hmm. So today's bitterness is a lot different from yesteryear's bitterness.
How is the bitterness different between the beta acids and the alpha acids?
I'm glad you asked. The beta acids are...
Throw the softballs up into the air, yes.
The beta acids are less bitter, you know, weight for weight than isomerized alpha. Uh-huh. Can't find that particular thing. It's about 66% as bitter, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly. I'll look that up in a minute. But it's a harsher bitterness than alpha. Alpha, isomerized alpha, is a kind of a clean, sharp bitterness. Oxidized beta is a more lingering, slightly more astringent bitterness. Mm-hmm. If you characterize them as such. So hot bitterness, 30 IBUs 50 years ago or 100 years ago would have been a little more bitter or harsh on the palate than 30 IBUs from predominantly isomerized alpha like we have today. Mm. 30 IBUs today is kind of like, yeah, it's bitter, but it's not nasty or anything. Mm-hmm. 50, 100 years ago, 30 IBUs would have been kind of harsher and more lingering on the palate. Those are your resins. And then you have your essential hop oils, and these are what give hops their aroma and flavor. And there's a lot of those, like hundreds of those, components in those essential oils. Mm-hmm. We have names for a lot of them: myrcene, humulene, carophyllene, farcinene, ionine. What's on? I'm mispronouncing these on purpose. Linalool, geraniol, neroli, citronellol, terpineol, etc. Lots and lots of them. They kind of fall into three categories. You have your hydrocarbons, which are, I love these names, which consists of like monoterpenes, sesquiterpenes, and norisoprenoids. These all sound like species of tortoise to me. Mm-hmm. But those are hydrocarbons, and those include your myrcene, humulene, beta-carylophyllene, farnesene, et cetera. You have your oxygenated hydrocarbons, which are your linalool, geraniol, neroli, citronellol, and terpineol. And then you have your sulfur-containing compounds. And these, there aren't as many of these, but they are especially pungent. And one example is 4-MMP, which is a thioester. And 4-MMP has that kind of that cat pee, black currant kind of smell. Mm-hmm. So there's a wide range of essential oils that make up, the total hop aroma from any given variety. And a lot of recent work, and recent, I mean, over the last 10, 15, 20 years, has been trying to understand how these oils come together to give us a particular variety's aroma. They've, you know, tried isolating different oils and combining them, trying to reproduce, say, the aroma from Cascade or the aroma from Citra or East Kent Goldings. But they haven't really achieved it. It's always been really lacking in mm-hmm. some essential character that you get from the hop itself, mm-hmm. but not from a combination of oils. So,
well,
very complex system.
I think that because it's a combination of the oils, but I mean, you know, like just trace amounts of certain oils, I think,
right,
can
right.
have a dramatic effect on the overall whole. When you make a single hop beer, it's one thing, and if you were to take, you know, two single hop beers and then make another beer with both those hops in it, chances are it'd be radically different than just those two, the characteristics of those two single hop beers.
Yes.
It's interesting how they tend to integrate and support each other or make dramatic changes to certain characteristics all of a sudden really stand prominent, whereas you wouldn't have imagined that from anything.
Right, right. Yeah, very, very complex subject. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the recent work has been trying to characterize, you know, how much hop aroma intensity we get from dry hopping and under mm-hmm. what conditions of dry hopping do we best get it. Mm-hmm. And even these studies, and I'm referring to a couple I just saw this past summer at the World Brewing Congress, really haven't, you know, been able to identify any solid model.
Right.
It's really a fascinating subject.
It is. It is very complex. It's one of the things that I've noticed about dry hopping is that, so generally you think, well, you know, one amount of dry hopping is good. Well, twice as much is twice as good, and three times as much is three times
right,
as good.
Right, right.
But, some recent experiments, you can have, like, you know, great hop character with, you know, one set of hops. You add a little more, and you know, it's okay. You triple it, and all of a sudden, you're to a point where it's less than it would have been at, you know, 1x.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the 3x is somehow pulled out the hop character. Something weird has happened, and then there's, like, you know, no hop character or less hop character than you started with. So it's very odd how that plays together, and I think for that reason it's very hard for someone to say, well, you know, throw in this, throw in that, and here you go. Maybe someday we'll get to that, but right now it's kind of this worked well for me. Let me try this and, you know, see if I get similar results, or, you know, let me try this and see if it's better or worse. And then it's kind of hit or miss.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of interesting at the World Brewing Congress this summer. Dan Vollmer has been doing a study at Oregon State, part of his PhD work, where they looked at overall hop intensity, hop aroma intensity in dry hop beers. Mm-hmm. As a function of milligrams or, you know, total oil content in the hops mm-hmm. and total mm-hmm. oil content added to the beer, mm-hmm. they had 23 different farms, different lots mm-hmm. of Cascade mm-hmm. from both mm-hmm. Oregon and Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And when he plotted, then they had all these beers that were dry hop with these different lots of Cascade, same year. They had them all evaluated by an experienced and qualified and calibrated tasting panel.
Mm-hmm.
No correlation to hop oil content mm-hmm. to overall hop and aroma intensity.
Right. So there's so many things I want to say.
Yeah.
One is, I realized this a while ago, and I think it was, back a few years ago, I know Burleson was, you know, really high on, going with, you know, the more oil, the better.
Yeah.
And that's what we all thought. Well, and I'm sure today he'd probably say something different, but I mean, that's really what got me going on oils, you know, back when. Yeah. But I find that it's got nothing to do, or I mean, it's got something to do with it, but I mean, it just depends on what kind of oils and what, and you know, a lesser oil hop could have so much more aromatic, you know, character and flavor, and you know, be so much more, you know, yeah, hop intense than something with a lot more oil, which is, you know, counterintuitive, because you think it's, well, it's coming from these oils, that's where all this flavor and aroma is coming from. Well, you know, it depends on what kind of oils. It's like having a car. You know, you could have a big car, or you could have a small car, and well, having a bigger car doesn't mean it's going to go faster or drive better or be more comfortable.
Right.
But Porno Steve and I went up to Oregon to check some, make some hop selection at, of Cascades of all hops, and we were at Crosby Hop Farm, and they gave us four different brewer's cuts of Cascades from four different farms. They didn't tell us which is which. But, you know, some of them, one was from, I think, Yakima, three were from Oregon, and, you know, some of them, some, they all seemed nice, but some of them seemed much less, it was all the same year, you know, and it seemed, some seemed very kind of pedestrian, just a bit of citrus, nothing else.
Right.
Some seemed, you know, a little bit more bold than that, a little citrus, little floral, nothing else. Of the two that we liked, one was, you know, a little more balanced and had a little bit more of those things. And the one that we ended up picking was just had all this character to it. And it was multi-layered, and it had citrus, and it had floral, and it had, you know, all these a tiny bit dank, and just so many things going on in it, and it's so much more intense than the other three. And that was actually the Crosby Hop Farm grown Cascades.
Interesting.
And you know what happens is some of these farms are just down the road from them, and not to say that the other hops weren't good, they're different, and it depends on what you're looking for. I like, you know, a bolder, you know, hop character. And so that's what I'm looking for, at least in the beers that we're brewing right now. When we want hop character, we really want hop character. I don't want to, you know.
And yeah, so, not messing around.
Yeah. And so, you know, the thing is, it depends on how much water there is, sun, wind, fertilizer, what time they pick it, you know, just so many little different factors that's why every hop farm is different. And even if they pick it, you know, on day one of picking versus picking it on day five of picking, those two sets of hops are different.
That's right.
So, you know, really, you know, it gets me. It reminds me of chocolate malt. There's chocolate malts at 600 Lovibond. There's chocolate malts that are 300 Lovibond. They're, you know, they all have just wildly different flavors and aromas and colors, yet we treat them as if they're identical.
You know,
we just say chocolate malt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So same thing on hops. You know, it depends on, you know, specific farms, specific hops, and they can be wildly different.
Indeed.
Well, I'll tell you what. One of the great things while we were up there is, have you used this new Brew Guru app from the AHA?
I've been looking into it lately. I haven't had a chance to really play with it the last couple of weeks. I've been,
been
busy on the next edition of the book.
Sure. But I'll tell you, it's worth it. It's free. Free app.
Yeah.
You get it from the App Store. You can get it from the Google Play Store. You can get it from... they may even have it on the AHA site. I don't know. It's free to use, but you only get like a trial period, and then it's limited on what you get out of it. But if you're an AHA member, which I hope most of you people are,
right?
It's got, I think, one of the best locator apps in there. because they're feeding it with the entire AHA database of shops, bars, breweries, brew pubs. And on top of it, it tells you which ones have the AHA discount. So if you're out traveling around, you're like, I'm in Oregon. I want to go and, you know, check out, you know, homebrew shop. And somebody actually asked me that, you know, what homebrew shop do I go to? I send them to Steinbart's. If they had that AHA app, they could have looked and said, oh, well, here's a shop right next to me. Oh, it looks it has an AHA discount. So pretty cool. And, you know, it's also got a lot of curated content that, you know, it's stuff that will help you be a better brewer. You can read it on your phone. And, again, you know, if you're an AHA member, you get all that stuff, you know, all the deals, money-saving deals, and you don't have to pay for the app. So check it out, Brew Guru. You can search for it on, like I said, in the various app stores and online, and it's pretty good. I thought it ran well. I thought it was efficient. Yeah. I think they paid for a quality coder instead of some of these things are crap.
Right, but this is nice.
Yeah,
I was playing around with it, and it is really nice.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. So I highly recommended. I fiddled with it, so you should fiddle with it too. All right, let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more about hops right after this.
Hey there, BN Army. Have you heard the latest at Hop Tech? Since Hop Tech has doubled in size after a huge expansion, Jade and Roberto can stock even more of the best quality homebrewing supplies and equipment. Over 60 kick-ass varieties of hops and malts, monster truckloads of quality brewer's yeast, including White Labs, Y yeast, and multiple dry yeasts. They even have all grain systems from Grainfathers and Ruby Street Brew Systems, thanks to Jade, the brand new all-grain brewer. And don't forget about their 10% discount to all BN Army members. Jade and Roberto are waiting for you and all of your brewing questions over at hoptech.com. HopTech, totally not sucking since 1983.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. This is Jamel Zanishev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version, too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever-so-subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn-the-cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy-drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
To find Heretic beers near you, click on Find Some at hereticbrewing.com.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and the freshest ingredients, backed by the best customer service in the business. Do you like to mash using efficient fly sparging, but would like an easy way to heat your strike and sparge water? Enter the new Brewer's Edge Electric Mash Water Heater, a plug-in, anywhere, precisely controlled heater for strike and sparge water. Ditch the fumes and second burner and make mashing easy. Go to williamsbrewing.com today and browse their vast selection. That's williamsbrewing.com. Orders placed by 4 p.m. Pacific time weekdays ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back.
Hey.
Hey. Who would have thunk? And who would have thunk you could make kombucha and turn it into a business?
That's true.
Or just need a refresher on best practices, you can join White Labs for a two-day course taught in collaboration with Mananova. Instructions are going to cover the science and process behind kombucha, from microbiology, fermentation, formulation, scaling up, and choosing the right equipment to dealing with common issues. Like people are going, what's kombucha?
Fermented tea.
What Viva said.
I had some kombucha beer this past weekend at Michigan.
Well, there you go. That's a hotbed of kombucha, I hear.
Yeah.
Register at yeastman.com before October 18th. Kombucha. All right. And you could spend time in lovely San Diego. At least I'm assuming that's where it'll be.
Probably, yeah.
Oh, yeah. San Diego is lovely. Too bad in Fear the Walking Dead they burned San Diego to the ground. I'm just saying. That was a mistake. Zombies or not.
They should have reserved it for, say, Fresno or something. But.
Oh, Fresno, yeah. You burned that to the ground. Yeah. I think we lost all our Fresno listeners. No, they're probably like, yeah, they'd be fine. Yeah. So let's just get rid of it. All right. Hops. What were we talking about, hops?
Well, we were talking a little bit about the essential oils. Probably be a good time to take a step back and talk about, you know, what kinds of aromas we get from the hop. What do these oils contribute to the hop aroma? What do you think?
Sure. Let me throw out some guesses here.
Okay.
I think floral is one of them.
Definitely.
A lot of floral. I think you get a lot of fruity.
Yeah.
I think citrus in abundance.
In American hops, yes.
Yes. Well, if you're talking the non-American hops, I think then you're going more the floral, the herbal, the spicy.
Tropical fruit, yeah.
Tropical fruit in American hops as well.
True.
But herbal, spicy, floral is what I think of the German, a lot of the German, well, not right, the latest right. German hops, but some of the more traditional and also the British. I think there's some piney or evergreen characteristics.
Yeah, yeah.
And
some resinous kind of character.
Yeah, and then since it's kind of vegetal, you can get some vegetal.
Mm-hmm.
You get some sulfurs, things like that.
Right, that's that kind of that dank smell that a lot of you like.
Uh-huh. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a lot of different characters in various. I maybe I'm oversimplifying. Tell me what you think. But to me, I think you can kind of characterize American hops as citrus, British hops as floral, earthy. European hops is more floral, spicy.
Mm-hmm.
Pacific hops, that would be like New Zealand, Australia. Now you're into floral, tropical fruit and citrus, kind of, you know, a meld there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have like those are the dominant characters. And then you'll also have some herbal, some vegetal character, you know, filling in, you know, kind of filling in the blanks or the spaces between them.
But, yeah, you're totally full of crap.
Okay.
All right.
it's my opinion.
Yeah. No. I think that, you know, perhaps even
once
as recent as a few years ago, that was perhaps true. But that has really gone by the wayside now. So there's a lot of, fruitier hops being grown in Germany.
Yes.
If you look at the whole melon and,
Mandarin of Bavaria.
Yeah. So there's a ton of that there. There's citrusy being grown in England.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tropical fruity being grown in the U.S. now.
Right.
I mean, there's just so many hops being grown. And I think when not to leave out. Get the paddles. New Zealand and Australia.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think that they're growing also some very good, what you would consider maybe like West Coast American style hops with, the citrus, the piney.
As
well. So
yeah.
I think that, once upon a time, not that long ago,
Right.
But I think the cutting edge of hops now has blurred all those lines across the world.
Good point.
Because I'm getting a lot of experimental hops and new hops that are coming out that, you know, you just never heard of, or they're just numbers. They're not even pelletized.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just got all these things, and they're grown, you know, just everywhere. So everything's changing. So I think once upon a time that was true, and I think that has gone away now.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, because brewers are looking for all these different compounds, every grower is like, well, I could grow that, you know, mm-hmm. I could come up with a hop that does that, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great time for hop exploration and production.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Porno Steve grows a lot of hops in his backyard.
Yeah.
Grows
that's
a lot
what
of something.
They are.
They look like hops. Somehow related
smell
to hops.
Like hops.
They're in the latest batch of Evil Cousin, no doubt.
The dankest of hops. All right. So, all those characters. So how do people relate? I think Thomas's question was, all right, so when I look at an analysis of a hop online, and before I spend $15 a pound for the hops, and then, he's in Sweden, so he's got to pay, probably at least that in shipping it. So he's paying like $30 a pound for hops. How should he analyze the and I say this because, you know, for him to order, 10 pounds of hops, or, a 5-kilo box, 11 pounds of hops, it's $330. Not cheap. So, I think if he's looking at, doesn't want to make a mistake on, and for homebrewers, it's even, crazier.
Right, right.
So how does divide up all these hydrocarbons and other oils and stuff into something that makes sense for him.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of review what we've learned so far. One, we know that total hop bitterness is a combination of isomerized alpha acid, oxidized beta acid, although that's a small portion, given today's 2-to-1, 3-to-1 ratio of alpha to beta.
Mm-hmm.
You also have your alpha to, your, listen to me try to talk. You also have your oxidized alpha acids. Those are less bitter than your oxidized beta. But because alpha acid is a greater proportion of the hop than beta, they tend to contribute more to the overall bitterness in today's beers than they did in the past. So, for bitterness, you've got iso alpha, oxidized alpha, oxidized beta, and polyphenols.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're bittering with a high alpha hop, 12, 13, 15%, you're not going to have as much polyphenol in the brew as if you were bittering with a 5% alpha hop.
Less hop matter going in there.
Right. Very interesting paper at the World Brewing Congress this summer from Christina Hahn from Oregon State, where they analyzed commercial beers, and like 30-plus commercial beers, looked at the types of hops that were used, HPLC'd them, got the fractions of the components that were in there, tried to fit a model to the perceived bitterness from the components. Long story short, iso alpha was a big factor. Oxidized alpha was a big factor. Then it went to ABV and residual extract as terms of factors that influence the total perceived bitterness of that beer. But it's not a perfect model, and they were still only bumping against like 83%, fit, curve fit to prediction. But it was, that's interesting. I mean, polyphenol didn't really, didn't make the cut in terms of significance, nor did oxidized beta.
Well, and how does we always hear cohumulone? Oh, you want hops that are low in cohumulone, below 30%, because otherwise it's a harsher bittering.
Yeah. Well, good question. Shellhammer did an interesting paper about that a couple years ago. The feeling there was that cohumulone doesn't have a harsher bitterness than, say, ad or n-humulone mm-hmm. when it's isomerized, but it isomerizes faster. Mm-hmm. It's more easily isomerized than the other isoforms, and also it doesn't degrade as fast as say the trans form. Mm-hmm. So cohumulone is easier to isomerize and stays in the beer longer, you know, as a function of oxidation and staling mm-hmm. than the other forms of alpha acid. Mm-hmm. He did not find a correlation to level of cohumulone to level of perceived bitterness. Mm-hmm. It seemed to be more a function of, you know, total bitterness.
Right.
And other factors. So,
I've been going towards the part where the same thing like on oil. I'm like, I think that's like old information it had a reason for coming up in the first place. And right. I think you've explained, why that might be, like the same thing on total oil. Right. There was a reason why we're thinking, well, that's the answer. But the answer is just so much more complex than that. That focusing on that is kind of a red herring.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. All right. So, So that's bittering. But would you say that someone should look for a certain kind of the hop alpha acid for bittering? Combination alpha, beta, cohumulone. A minimum alpha acid. I mean, they've got hops up to 19% now.
Yeah. I think it kind of goes back to what you were doing, and I can't imagine what the hell Porno Steve was doing up there with you. But anyway, when you're selecting your cascade, what kind of specific character are you looking for in that beer with the hops you choose?
Right. Well, it depends on the beer it's going in.
Yeah.
So if I was doing something a little more restrained, a little more mellow, if I was making, a Sierra Nevada pale ale type of clone, I'd probably go more, the citrus, a little bit of the floral, and, kind of a, very clean kind of character. We use Cascades and Cousin, so I want something that's, really brings a lot of both of those and a lot of punch to the table.
Right, right.
I think it's interesting that we've come so far, yet seems still so far away from an answer on hops in general. I mean, we've got some ideas, but they keep coming up with new hops that kind of blow away our perceptions and our preconceived notions. Now, on Cousin in particular, we use a CO2 extracted alpha acids, hop bitters, right?
Right.
And the reason we do this is, one, because you kind of get a bit of a vegetal-y taste if you use so much hops, even with a higher alpha acid hops, you get a bit of a vegetally when you try and just go over the top.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons we started using that. And then also, so I don't think it's, the polyphenols, but I think it's the vegetally, and also it seemed like the overall bittering was less. It's like the vegetal matter is somehow taking some of the alpha acids out of solution. It's like it's binding again with them, and it's dropping out, and so it's hard to get a high enough bitterness.
Right. They've noticed that in a couple of studies where the actual IBUs, the measured IBUs from both the spectrophotometric method standard, and as well as HPLC, looking at isoalpha, that the bitterness does drop with higher and higher amounts of dry hopping. That extra vegetal matter in the mm-hmm. beer and then being separated from the beer is okay. actually pulling alpha acid, like oxidized alpha mm-hmm. and isoalpha, mm-hmm. out of solution. It's sticking to that mass
right.
and being pulled out. So, yeah, that's kind of counterintuitive, but mm-hmm. that seems to be part of what's happening
right.
When you dry hop.
The same thing, you know, the amount of yeast you use, the strain of yeast you use, all those affect exactly. the amount of bittering that goes through. I mean, that's yeah. why I keep saying it's impossible to really come up with a formula that is going to predict IBUs. It just can't be done. There's so many other little factors. And then if right. you want to relate it to actual, perception of bitterness, that's even wider of the mark still, because right. then there's so many other things in there.
Yeah.
That's why I tell people, just pick one formula. It doesn't matter what it is, and stick with it. Just
yeah. And base your decisions off that benchmark.
Yeah, benchmark and your experience to that benchmark. Exactly. If you change benchmarks, then you're screwing yourself. So people are like, well, you know, you like Rager. I've been using, Daniels or something. And it's like, I'm going to switch. I'm like, don't switch. Just stick with whichever one you've chosen. Just stick with that.
And, yeah, you know where that is.
Yeah. I mean, you yep. could calculate it both ways, but, you know, always relate it back to your benchmark, or, you know, calculate all three out, and then, you know, mm-hmm. I think it would just be too confusing.
Yeah. You know, going back to your earlier question, I do kind of think in terms of style, there's something to be said for the high alpha varieties in terms of an IPA, or at least today's preferences for IPA, where you're looking for a mm-hmm. really sharp, clean bitterness, mm-hmm. you know. In some less bitter styles, you know, 30 right. IBU sort of thing, you know, now you can go towards those lower alpha where you're getting more of that, getting a little more of the polyphenol, mm-hmm. Getting a little more of the other bitterness character coming out in that beer. Adding to the overall complexity of a lower bitterness style, mm-hmm. Say your English bitters, Saison, another one, right. Where you're looking for some complexity to that bitterness rather than a single sharp note.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I used to think that as well on a lot of the, some of the German styles where you want just a hint of background hop character. I always like using the lower alpha acid so the beer didn't become too bitter before you could get some background flavor from a bittering addition. Mm-hmm. But I think now with IPAs, I wouldn't go with the 2% alpha acid hops, but anything in the, 6 to 8% range I think is more than adequate. And I think, one of the other things you've been saying is, the water adjusting is, kind of your seasoning
sulfates.
There. Yeah. And I think it's better to, pick the hops for flavor and character when you're making an IPA, and then you can add, a little more, gypsum to kind of punch up the effect of the bittering.
Yeah.
It just depends on, I guess, the kind of character you're overall looking for. So in our lower, bittered, smaller, regular IPA that we do all these experimental hops in, we never pay attention really to what the alpha acid is, other than when it comes time to calculate out a bittering addition.
Yeah.
But we do, enough gypsum in there and it's dry enough that, that comes out versus like you do the evil cousin, and that's as much alpha acid will dissolve in the liquid. I mean, it coats our kettle because we use so much. But it comes across very mellow because of everything else that we're doing. So it's bitter, but it's nowhere near harsh. It's a smooth bittering. And so it's funny, we want a harsher bittering in the regular IPA and a smoother bittering in the bigger IPA.
Yeah, I was really gratified at how well the evil cousin traveled to Singapore.
Oh, yeah. Tasted great.
It did.
As long as it's refrigerated, can't go wrong. I'm very pleased. A lot of places I've been that it carries across so well.
Yeah.
All right. I think one thing I want to tell you about is the celebration. It's the Gold Country Homebrewers Club. They're having their celebration, which is a homebrew competition. It's AHA, BJCP, and Brewing Network sanctioned. The comp is going to use the 2015 BJCP guidelines, and it is going to be held October 8th at Yolo Brewing Company in Sacramento. So it's no longer accepting entries as of this reading, but be sure to get down there, volunteer, you know, help out with the competition if you've never helped with the competition before.
It can be a lot of fun.
If you're a judge, get down there and judge. They can always use more qualified judges. There's never a competition that, says, oh, no, I don't need qualified judges. So check it out. It is the Gold Country Brewers Homebrew Club, and it is the celebration and October 8th at Yolo Brewing Company in Sacramento. All right, let's take one more short break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up hops right after this.
Ken Grossman of Sierra Nevada Brewing Company says, making great beer is hard. Making the same great beer every day is harder. Brewers Publications announces its latest release for breweries of any type and size, Quality Management, an essential guide for brewers by Mary Pelletieri. Proper quality management for small, regional, and national breweries is critical. Whether you are an established business or brand new, learn the best ways to create and manage a quality system in your brewery. This book will guide you in developing a comprehensive program that will grow with your brewery, help ensure quality processes in the brewery, and continue providing great beer for your fans. Quality management for breweries is critical for continued success. This guidebook teaches you to integrate quality management in every level of the operation. It will guide you in developing a comprehensive program to ensure quality processes in your brewery. Quality management, an essential guide for brewers, now available from Brewers Publications. Learn more at brewerspublications.com.
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, they're amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Homebrewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from the brewingnetwork.com. Heard about White Labs Pure Pitch yeast. Pure Pitch is yeast grown right in its final packaging. That means yeast that has never been exposed to the environment. And White Labs Pure Pitch yeast for homebrewers is now available to everyone at homebrew retailers nationwide. Easy to use, perfectly sized, and ready to pitch. White Labs yeast packaged using their FlexCell process ensures the purest yeast on the market. Visit whitelabs.com to learn more about Pure Pitch, FlexCell technology, and how it's created. Then visit a homebrew retailer near you for your own perfectly sized package of Pure Pitch yeast. And you can say hello to your own little friend. www.whitelabs.com.
I've had it! I am never putting hops in my beer again!
What? Why?
It's just too ridiculous! Insane prices, stupid contracts, high shipping costs, crappy selection.
Dude, you need Nico Brew.
Nico Brew will rock your f***ing face right the f*** off your f***ing skull. $5 shipping to all 50 states, plus fantastic international rates, get you low prices on Nico Brew's great selection of hops and more. Whether you're a home brewer, a pro brewer, or a homebrew shop owner, Nico Brew can get you the hops you need in increments big and small, single orders, spot buys, or full contracts. And there's only one place to join the uber special Secret Elite Bare Bones Club, where you'll get the best deals anywhere.
Holy f***ing shit.
NicoBrew.com. NikoBrew. NicoBrew, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. I think if you're looking to get into the beer industry, you have an opportunity to sign up for the Business of Craft Beer, which is a class being offered by the Fruit Craft Institute in Oakland, California. The course is going to run from October 22nd to November 19th, so you need to hurry. The enrollment deadline is October 10th, so you got a little over a week to get signed up. Check it out. The course curriculum is going to cover recipe development, brewing techniques, sourcing ingredients, equipment, permitting, licensing, business planning, finance, marketing, all topic brewery owners and industry experts throughout the Bay Area. Beer style and off-flavor tasting workshops are led by Master Cicerone Nicole Ernie. And visits to practitioner facilities, I don't know, breweries, you mean? I think they practice at 21st Amendment. They practice at Drake's, and they practice at Ford Point and Magnolia. So they're going to go to those breweries. For more info, head to foodcraftinstitute.org and hit the courses menu at the top. All right. You still haven't answered my question. What should Thomas do? How should he be choosing from when you get those analysis sheets? And it's like, well, here's your alpha, here's your beta, here's your hop storage index, here's your oils, here's a brief discussion of it. How should one choose amongst those?
Well, that is a personal decision, much like Porno Steve's. But I would say the hop storage index is something we haven't touched on, but we should real quick. Uh-huh. That is an indicator of how readily the hop will oxidize and lose alpha and beta to oxidized alpha and beta, which will no longer isomerize, but are bitter in their own right. So if you select a hop that has a low hop storage index, kind of look at the date, look at how it was stored, that will give you a little bit of a feel as to, what percentage of the overall bitterness is going to start coming from the oxidized alpha and oxidized beta and, versus the isoalpha for that overall bitterness character. It could be a little bit coarser, a little more complex, getting some more of that aspect in there rather than a singular iso bitterness. As much as I would like to be able to write down the answer, there's hops and hop characteristics as they're currently given to us still don't provide us with a lot of information on, things that we can concretely use to choose one lot of hops over another or one variety of hops over another. Pick them up, smell them, use what you like. Jamil, would you... knowing what you do about hops and selecting hops, professionally now, what other advice would you give in terms of selecting a hop based on numbers?
The more and more I see those numbers, the less and less I care about them. Especially when you realize that, a lot of these hops come from, where the numbers will be pretty much identical and the hops are totally different.
Yeah.
So what do the numbers tell you? I think if I was an industrial brewer trying to maximize my dollars and use very few hops, that would tell me something. But, other than that, like you're saying, what I do is I look at the spot list on stuff, and I'm like, oh, you know, all right, give me you know, a few boxes of that, you know, anything else that I should be looking at? And they're like, oh, well, we got some interesting stuff that was grown in Idaho. And it's like, oh, okay, you know, it may be the same hop you're already getting, but this was grown in Idaho. It's completely different. All right. Right. It's like right. Two different, totally different hops. Okay, well, you know, give me a few boxes of that. And then we just kind of play around with them.
Yeah. It's so. The alpha acid percent, the beta acid percent, hop storage index, these are all just benchmarks to kind of help you, you know, benchmark that hop, that particular lot of hops, this time versus next time. It's kind of like the whole IBU equation, you know, you're saying, Jamil. Mm-hmm. You know, use the calculation as a benchmark, but then, you know, taste the beer, sample the beer, think about how that that hop character came through based on that number. That's your benchmark for next time you brew it. Same when you're using hops, you know, look at those numbers and don't take them as gospel. Take them as a benchmark for how the hop character came out when you brewed with them. And, you know, think about that the next time you're selecting a hop for a similar brew, you know, to how that hop performed. Mm-hmm. We're still in the baby steps when it comes to understanding total hop aroma and bitterness character.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good job, John. Good show.
Thank you.
I think that if you enjoy the show, you want to check out our fine sponsor, Adam and Eve. Go to adamandeve.com. Check out all the goodies they've got there. Use the offer code Jamil, J-A-M-I-L, and you're going to get 50% off of almost any item. You're going to get 3 free adult DVDs. And they're now giving you the free Power O vibrating ring, which, you know, good for him, good for her, is what I've heard. And I imagine it's probably good for him and good for him. And
tell us about it, Porno Steve.
Could be good for her and good for her.
It's a good product.
However you go, and free shipping. Well, and, you know, check them out. It's a good company that, you know, nothing wrong with having sex. Enjoy it how you will with your loved ones.
And they've been a sponsor for a long time, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly. And they stand behind their business and their products, and you know, they guarantee what they do. And you know, it's good people running it. So just because it has something to do with sex doesn't mean it's dirty. It means it's fun.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. So enjoy it. Check them out at adamandeve.com. Check out all our other fine sponsors, such as Blickman Engineering, innovating your homebrew day for you. Check out the AHA Brew Guru. Lots of good stuff out there. I mean, it's never been a better time to be a homebrewer. So check all those folks out. Send them your business as your way of saying thank you for sponsoring this show. So you get all the fine information that John Palmer disgorges upon his microphone. Check out the Brewing Network store, brewingnetwork.com/store. You get all sorts of goodies in there. You get hats, you get hoodies, you get cufflinks, you get doilies. You get them all. All the stuff that you would want as a home brewer. Check them out. Brewingnetwork.com/store. Until then, everybody, brew strong.
Be strong, Emma.